Switzerland, the beginning and growth of a nation. Switzerland today, life, work, diversity. In a nationwide concentration of forces, the National Exhibition mirrors the future in the present. The National Exhibition, meeting place of the nation, will become the Swiss capital for 6 months. Swiss National Exhibition, Lausanne, 1964.
This new series begins with a special moment in the sound history of Switzerland. I'm talking about the Swiss National Exhibition, which took place in Lausanne in 1964, of which we have just heard a promotional clip. In place of past conservative stereotypes, Switzerland attempted to reposition itself as a forward-looking nation, driven by a faith in technological progress and modernity. To listen back to this particular moment, I'm glad to welcome Patricia Liegi, a cultural anthropologist and researcher in sound studies working at the University of Lucerne and at the University of Zurich. Hi, Patricia, and thanks for joining today.
Yeah, thanks so much for the invitation.
In many ways, Expo 64 was a testament to Switzerland's openness to the world. From the perspective of a sound history of globalized Switzerland, Sector 5 of the exhibition is of particular interest. One of the pavilion's star attractions was the sound installation Les Échanges, created by composer Rolf Liebermann. Before listening to the recording, I suggest we read some of your comments about this musical work from a 2014 article.
Sector 5 in the 1964 National Exhibition focused on the various aspects of Swiss trading, banking, and logistic activities worldwide in order to illustrate the complex economic processes to visitors. The machines themselves became the mouthpiece, which were used on a daily basis in the offices and sales outlets shown in the sector. The Swiss composer Rolf Liebermann had put together a mechanical orchestra consisting of 156 machines, which played his composed piece as if controlled by a ghostly hand. The musical instruments included typewriters, calculating machines, cash registers, teleprinters, horns, and telephone sets. The official guide to the National Exhibition further writes,
"At the heart of the sector, the symphony Les Échanges is a sensational novelty. It is a composition of musique concrète played by a mechanical orchestra consisting mainly of office machines."
So now let's listen to Liebermann's symphony Les Échanges.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the technical sophistication of the music piece not only astonished the audience at the time, but also still us, I have the impression. So the idea of making music with machine sounds and noises was of course not new and had already been explored by Italian futurists in the beginning of the 20th century. What was unusual about Lieberman's composition was the computer-aided realization and thus the absence of any human performance. So we only have like non-human machine performance. The novelty was to let the machines speak for themselves as an expression of industrial know-how, but also at the same time as a means of national representation.
Indeed, and now I'd like to take some time to think again about what we just heard in the composition and wonder how it feels, and also what does the composition tell us today, not only about Switzerland's attempt to rebrand itself as a hypermodern nation in the 1960s, but also about its increasing role as a major player in global economy.
Of course, it was a spectacular kind of composition and also visual arrangement of all these machines making music. But in the reaction to the National Exhibition, somehow there was also the discussion that it lacked a bit of emotionality. Probably many people that had probably seen the National Exhibition in 1939, which was kind of much more emotionally loaded, also because of, also musically, because they used like folklore music. So they had this Landidörfli song which touched people by its national pathos and like this alpine idyll. It was somehow really a very strong break with the this other kind of vision of Switzerland in 1939. But still, I think musically, this Lieberman piece somehow rested the strongest in the kind of memory of the exhibition viewers.
Thanks for sharing these thoughts. I mean, when I was asking how does it feel to listen to the composition, I also meant in the sense of today. To my ears, the composition creates a sort of impression of simplicity, despite its technological sort of sophistication. There's also a sort of relatively easy to follow composition. There's usually only one thing happening at a time. So here it becomes pretty clear that this one master entity that controls all the subordinated sound machines. And this is a bit along the line of a so-called master and slave dichotomy. So there's clearly a kind of brain that pilots, that control all the machines, so that dance together in harmony for the pleasure of the listener. So there is this kind of trivialization, perhaps, of what is supposed to be represented, which is the complexity of global economical processes. And as such, I would say perhaps it is a bit closer to representation of Switzerland itself as a global economic platform. That means a centralized platform hosting headquarters of countless finance, trading, shipping, and insurance companies, a site of global management from which decisions are made and enforced onto workers and resources elsewhere in the world. So I don't know how you perceive this composition in that perspective.
Lieberman, of course, chose forms of organization we already know, like the organization of an orchestra, like in different instruments, and to use also the same form of an orchestra, but replacing the human with the machine. And I think this is an interesting gesture he made, and probably also one that reaches until today to the discussions about artificial intelligence. For some work steps, people weren't used anymore. So the machine, the automation, or now the robots came to labor that usually people did. And I think this development we have until today. So probably if you would search for a parallel to the Lieberman's orchestra, you could say, yeah, that's the machines that make music. It's the artificial intelligence that makes music today. So So I think it has very much this futuristic idea of replacing humans by machines is very strong. But not completely, because as you said, behind it and in the organization, there is still the human that orchestrates the aesthetics, but also have to deal with failures of the machines. Because as what I have read is that they had some problems also with the installation, that it didn't run all the time. For example, there were rats that nibbled on all the electronic devices and stopped its functioning.
That's an interesting anecdote.
So you always can have some bugs in the system that make it breaking down. And probably this is also what happens in global economic trade, that somehow there can be a breakdown for political reasons, but also for technical reasons we also had recently. Of course, what you were mentioning about master and slave, like ideas of hierarchies, of course, is missing in the piece because it's very playful with its also connection to mambo rhythmicities. It's very playful and nearly danceable. So it really goes into a taste of the time, probably also what we have heard in the introductionary sounds. You know, in this advertisement video where we only heard the sound at the beginning, where you had these entertainment orchestras, which were important in the 60s in film industry, but also in radio. So you also have a bit this ductus or this gesture of this entertainment music, which we do not have today anymore in this kind of expression.
It's interesting. I mean, I wanted to go back to the expression, let the machine speak for themselves. That's indeed a bit of a classic way of putting certain things that involves machinic processes. Of course, we could wonder a little bit what it means, what it highlights, and what also perhaps it conceals in the operation. So I think it's quite convenient in a way to have at disposal a representation which makes things relatively simple. Yes, actually, you know, someone has to do the job. In that case, it's Switzerland. We sit here with our good offices. We have nice machines. We know how to operate them. And then we can take up the role of central management. And this, in part, remains until today in the way people think of Switzerland and its role in the world. Of course, also, the other, that means these remote partners, they extremely objectified in the operation. That means that it's never a social process to trade and exchange and do banking operation. It's a purely functional process, but never really the idea that, in fact, we are dealing with other humans. That's why I think it's perhaps a bit problematic to speak of the machines speaking for themselves, or at least it demands a little bit like a deconstruction of what is at play, no? When one presents things in this way.
It was, of course, everything simplified and put into a form that is consumable. So probably we can also see the exhibition in the context of a growing consumer society, which was also the topic of the exhibition itself, like in the sector about the goods, Waren und Werte, goods and values. Yeah, there was like also a praise about this growing consumer society. So there was at the time probably not a critical reflection about that either. But I would like to stay at the point that you were speaking about, that this kind of trading also needs trading partners. So you are right that, of course, one could also have thought about creating a composition that thinks about trading not from the machines themselves and organizing the machines like an orchestra. So one could also have made a composition that thinks about networks and probably also musical ideas such as call and response, because you, in the trade, you make an offer and you get an offer back. So this call response or action reaction. But this was not the case. This idea of national identity transported by electroacoustic sounds was not new, because the Philips Pavilion at the exhibition in Brussels in 1958. Yannis Xenakis and others already tried to find other forms of sonic expression of nationality, but also of products and consumerism. So this connection to the consumer society was, of course, really also really strong, I think.
This brings us also perhaps to forms of criticism that emerge as part of the Expo 64. There is one book in particular, which was published in 1965. That means a few months after the end of the exhibition by, I think, an editor in Basel called Peter Rippmann. And the volume was called Trugbild der Schweiz, translated into English as something like misleading image of Switzerland. And it explicitly referred to the Expo 64 in order to unpack a number of critiques, in particular a critique of neutrality and the sort of political immobilism that went with it, or that was sort of perceived in the overall Expo 64. It also contained a critique of the capitalist values that are central to Switzerland in that time, and also visible in exhibition, and also importantly, what is described as half-practiced solidarity towards migrant workers that did not have the same rights like Swiss citizens. And that's the kind of things that was addressed in this Rippmann's book. Another example that we could perhaps also bring into comparison with the composition Les Échanges is the presence at the same exhibition of a steel sculpture by Jean Tinguely. Perhaps we can listen to it a little bit and say a few words about it.
It's definitely a counter-narrative to the Les Échanges, because it's kind of not controlled, but somehow semi-controlled sound of a machine that somehow happened to become a machine, but not doing any, not having any function, then making this ugly and not so nice sound and very repetitive sound. So one could also read it as a counter narrative to Les Échanges, where everything works perfectly, as you have said, like in this Swiss precision where markets are intact and everything works the way it should. But here you don't know why is it making that terrible noise, because it doesn't produce anything, so it's totally unproductive sculpture. Also made by secondhand or recycling material. As far as I know, Tinguely often used kind of old or recycling metal for his sculptures. And the sculptures also got their forms through the forms that were somehow partly already given by the objects he found, like this objet trouvé that he then built together. So it's sonically, but also visually, it's probably a big contrast to Les Échanges, or what would you think?
No, I think so too, and I think it's a really relevant observation I think you made. I also found this short statement by Tinguely from 1965, right after the expo, where he says, "My machines should not function smoothly, but should reveal themselves in a powerful and musical soundscape. The noise is part of the machine, which I try to incorporate into the design to the same extent as the plastic form." And therefore, this noise machine revealed a sort of self-critical stance towards the enthusiasm for progress celebrated at Expo 64. And of course, because it is a powerful artwork, I think it's extremely evocative, but also it contains mostly in sort of potential a lot of the elements that I thought were a bit missing otherwise in the exhibition. And it's also a good example that shows that how one can, as an artist, position oneself within a highly institutional context and still manage to sort of create a space of uncertainty somehow.
No, and it's interesting that it was a picture of Heureka that was put on the vinyl of the Souvenir Sonore, de l'Expo. So I think some people were impressed by the noise that it produced, because it's really it's a different world that opens up. But we also have somehow, or the impression that the exhibition gives, that kind of this idea of the capitalist technocratic development is somehow also heroized. So this kind of also self-heroization of Switzerland itself as a country that somehow completely is dedicated to this capitalist idea of the market. What also was discussed in the aftermath of the exhibition time, which was like more than 6 months it was open, was that the military pavilion somehow presented a very different picture of Switzerland, like with this also architectural form of a hedgehog, like the spikes of a hedgehog, like this go away and keep away from us, which somehow also can be seen, what you were talking a bit, or resonating also a bit, this lack of solidarity, not only with all those workers, these migrant workers from Southern Europe, but also with other kind of miseries probably in Global South or in other areas of the world.
I'm glad you mentioned those things, which in a way connect back to the question of the relationship between Switzerland and the rest of the world. And because before that, you also brought this term about Lieberman's composition, the genre of mambo that you sort of identified while listening to the piece. And mambo, clearly, is also a reference to non-Euro-centered music cultures. That's why I suggest we can listen a little bit to the jazz version of the composition Les Échanges, which was recorded, I think, soon after the exhibition by renowned Swiss jazz musicians. Thank you.
Okay, so this was just an excerpt of the jazz version of Les Échanges. But in a way, I find this version really interesting and helpful as a comparison to the machine version of it. It's perhaps also very much anchored in its time, no? As a jazz tune somehow, an interpretation. And there we can recognize a number of influences that are clearly extra Helvetic, in the sense that jazz, of course, itself was imported to Switzerland and as the rest of Europe already before the Second World War and after that even more. Also, additional reference such as a Latin percussion instrument, some sort of bongos, and the rhythms themselves. You mentioned mambo, I was thinking maybe samba or afro and Latino forms of music. That's interesting because that also creates possible connections with today's hearing of the composition, its interpretation, and again, in terms of relationship between Swiss identity, in that case, sonic Swissness, and the rest of the world.
For me, I had the impression that this playfulness is also like even enhanced, is strengthened. So we already had like this playfulness with these rhythms that kind of change and the sounds that move to the foreground and others to the background, like somehow this playfulness that is transported also through the rhythmicities of the piece. This is for my ear, it's somehow highlighted. And I also think something what you are saying is very interesting, that you say like, this interpretation with the Latin instruments, the samba, Afro, Latino, like this kind of global mix that you cannot clearly identify and say, oh, it is kind of Brazilian, Afro-Brazilian style, or it is more Cuban style, or it is, I don't know, Western African rhythm, whatever, that you cannot identify it so clearly national-wise. I think that's also interesting. It's very interesting in this jazz interpretation because it's an expression of a hybridity, kind of a musical hybridity. And it's somehow not kind of graspable in this idea of national terms, because music and sounds don't care about national boundaries to some extent. But of course, the other side is they can be appropriated, but also appropriated in a non-ethical way. That's like the downside of this kind of hybridization, which we shouldn't forget, of course. But I think, because you were asking about this idea of sonic Swissness, it is very much probably a sonic Swissness that we also can find today in projects in Switzerland like Norient, who also try to understand sonic Swissness in this idea of musical hybridity or crossover or whatever you want to call it, mix, kind of this mix of different kind of influences and styles.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting comment you just made about the necessity to rely on external elements in order to come up with a new picture, possible picture of Switzerland that would be future-oriented. And it's, for me, it's super interesting to observe. Then in that case, it's blackness in music that provide the stuff for a future-oriented Switzerland. So all of a sudden, blackness, whereas it was during colonial times always perceived as something backward and even non-civilized, all of a sudden the acceleration that technology brings reactualizes noise and perhaps otherness in sound, in that case blackness of jazz and of Latin music and perhaps African music, into something that can propel into the future. So if we discuss the Expo 64 in terms of a transition between a past idea of Switzerland and what it can become in the future, I think this is a crucial element. And these rhythms that you were just describing are also present in the machine version of the composition. So there is a sort of impression that blackness is indeed a bit appropriated as a mean for certain things. It is at the same time celebrated in the jazz version is kind of very clear. And it's even joyful, and you know, blackness is part of the feast of the becoming future of a nation. But of course, in terms of identity politics, blackness remains completely outside of Swiss life, basically. So I would say perhaps this moment could be also described as a turning point in Swiss sound history in terms of opening to race, but in the same twist, also adopting as a general policy the idea of colorblindness, which is the idea to not perceive social life in terms of color and racial differences, the idea to engage officially in a narrative where those things cannot be addressed directly. It's indeed an ideology that continues to operate until today. And of course, it becomes interesting to discuss again those questions in the light of the more recent researches about Swiss involvement with colonialism and therefore also racism. So I think if we want to move now towards a sort of concluding moment of the conversation and wonder what about sonic Swissness today?
Yeah, I think when we speak about Swiss sonic identity, probably we have also to ask who claims to be kind of this Swiss sonic identity. Who says, probably the question would be, who has an interest in creating a Swiss sonic identity and saying this is kind of Switzerland and this is the way Switzerland has to sound? Of course, this also goes back to the national hymn as a pure expression of Swiss sonicness. Also yesterday at the football game, that the Swiss football players, these women all sing the national hymn, which is totally patriarchal in its text. Fatherland, heroism and patriotism. I mean, this is kind of the pure expression of sonic Swissness, how it was thought to be at the beginning when it is connected to nation building. But this somehow has diversified and sonic Swissness is claimed by different actors today. I was mentioning the people from Norient who also kind of deal with sonic Swissness from a very different perspective, like from this music ethnological perspective and these kind of connections between Swiss artists, non-Swiss artists or non-Swiss artists that come to Switzerland and understand sonic Swissness from their perspective. So it's kind of also a pluralization that is happening somehow. But I also have the impression that through kind of the strengthening of national ideologies in the whole world and especially also in Europe, this idea of a national identity with nationalist ideologies connected has in these last 10 years become stronger or more influential. So I would say like when we were talking like 10 years ago about this hybridization through the media, also through the internet, now we also had a totally different history now of the internet. Like 10 years ago, like social media was probably more connecting. Now we see the downsides, like social media influencing ruptures between groups of people or conflicts. Yeah, although the political situation, so it has changed. So how do we perceive now this idea of national identity today? Because the political climate has changed.
No, I think it's an important point. And the question would be, okay, what kind of consequences can we draw from these changes? What are the priorities when it is about trying to understand Swiss identity in general, but also its sonic or oral manifestations? And for who are we doing this? I mean, if we agree, I think both on the fact that Swissness, it's part of a politics of nation branding. But of course, we also live in this country. So what would be the benefit of trying to reclaim sonic Swissness for other purposes than simply advertising for Switzerland and its economy?
If you ask about sonic Swissness, it's probably we probably should continue to democratize sonic Swissness, which somehow also started or happened surely in the 21st century to different actors who said, no, we are also sonic Swissness, also if we have not our grandfather that already lived on the state territory of Switzerland, but we have families from all over the world, like this kind of multinational idea of sonic Swissness. But there might be other ideas of what sonic Swissness could be. So I think a democratization of this idea of sonic Swissness probably could be also very important in a time where democracy in general is somehow under pressure.